Welcome to The Download here on WGN, WGNradio.com. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, my guest today, the star of the new Spike Lee film, Black Klansman. The film is based on the true story of how an African-American police officer gained membership into David Duke's Ku Klux Klan.
I'm going to say we're trapped, but that Peckerwood had a gun in my face. And he was an ass hair away from pulling the trigger.
And he didn't.
But he could have. And then I would have been dead. For what? Stopping some jerk-offs from playing dress-up?
Flip, it's intel.
Well, I'm not risking my life to prevent some rednecks from lighting a couple sticks on fire.
This is the job. What's your problem?
That's my problem. For you, it's a crusade. For me, it's a job. It's not personal, nor should it be.
Why haven't you bought into this?
Why should I?
Because you're Jewish, brother. The so-called chosen people. You've been passing for a WASP.
White Anglo-Saxon Protestant, cherry pie hot dog white boy. That's what some light-skinned black folks do. They pass for white.
Doesn't that hatred you've been hearing the Klan say, doesn't that piss you off?
Of course it does.
Then why are you acting like you ain't got skin in the game, brother?
Rookie, that's my business.
It's our business. I'm going to get you your membership card so you can go to the cross burning and get in deeper with these guys. Right, partner?
John David Washington plays Ron Stallworth, the first African-American police officer in Colorado Springs back in 1978. The film takes on the serious issue of race and racism, but at the same time uses humor and satire to help tell the story. The result, a unique, fresh look at the history of hate in this country. In short, classic Spike Lee. This is John David Washington's breakout role in a feature film. The former football player currently plays Ricky Jarrett in the HBO hit Ballers, which is about to start its fourth season. And John David is with me in studio now. John David, J.D. Washington, thanks
for
being here.
That was a heck of an intro. You wrote that?
I did write that, okay. Yeah, that's right. Is this a great... this is a huge weekend for you. Ballers comes out on Sunday, the film, this weekend. What's it feel like as an actor to have both these premieres on television and on the screen?
It's a tremendous blessing, and I'm real honored to be here. I mean, I'm looking at your view right now. This is crazy. Look, Chicago looks good. But it's a tremendous honor. I'm so proud of this film and to be able to work with Spike Lee. I mean, he's a hero of mine. It's somebody that I grew up watching, you know, my whole life, really, his films. He put so many men and women of color on a beautiful canvas. And it's a wonderful experience. I can't believe it.
What did you know about the story of Ron Stallworth? Because this is a true story. There's a man who was the first African American police detective.
Still alive,
Alive, and from Colorado Springs. What did you personally know before this film?
I'm not embarrassed to say I knew nothing. It's interesting. I went to an historically black college. I graduated from Morehouse in 06. And I'm very familiar with the history of our culture, but this one seemed to slip through the cracks. This one I didn't know about. So coming into this, I found out through Spike Lee. And before I read the book, we didn't talk much about it really, but he mentioned some of it, and I was like, this is familiar. This is like a Dave Chappelle skit, right, or something like. But obviously, when you did the research and saw the man, it was incredible, like how this happened, and extremely heroic. A lot of history in this film. I mean, with David Duke and really him being the first African American police officer in Colorado Springs at that time. I mean, they say he's like the Jackie Robinson of police officers. So that city. So it's a tremendous honor to be playing this.
And there's a big part of history plays a huge role in this. And it's fun to watch you in period pieces with your hair and the costumes. But there is this, that's the first scene of the film is about this idea that you would be the Jackie Robinson of police in Colorado Springs. Right. But the idea of where this film goes and kind of going undercover and duping the Ku Klux Klan. It really is. But there's something that is very serious about it, as I mentioned, but it is funny. There's a lot of great caricatures that are done inside of this real sort of anti-hate message film.
Well, yeah, there's some humor in it. I found it interesting I've seen it with, I think, two different audiences. What people laugh at or almost seem like there's like a bit of reluctance in their laugh or like, am I supposed to be enjoying it like this? Or like, you know, even I found myself why did I chuckle at that? That's crazy. That's serious. So, I mean, but that's the point in of the film. And honestly, I don't see anybody, Jordan Peele, obviously, Spike Lee, I don't see anybody else handling this information, this history, the way they can. You know, I don't know if I want to do it if it was with anybody else.
Yeah, and both of those... writers and directors, they have a history of being able to use humor and drama in, and obviously yeah, Spike Lee's case, that's what he's made his name on.
That's what I'm saying. They're packaging these messages, these historical facts, you know, in an entertainment, you know, in such an entertainment way, in such an enjoyable way that you're still going to the movies on Friday night. You can still go take your date or your friends and have, you know, have fun watching it. Again, it's not a comedy though.
Right.
So, and you're leaving there hopefully with all kinds of emotions, you know, feeling different things throughout the film, and hopefully leads to discussion and talking about our differences and talking about, you know, the country's, you know, language and hate language and all of that. So I believe that that's what this film can bring.
As an actor, of course, in this role, you're inundated with race language, with hate language. It's everywhere in this film, and it's used nonchalant in so many different ways. As an actor playing in a cast and ensemble and being directed to say the lines, how do you deal with that when there's some words that mean something to you and in your past, and then, you know, it's reading your story about how people have thrown epitaphs at you? Mm-hmm. I mean, how do you react as an actor? Do you have to sort of cordon yourself off?
Well, I mean, yeah, it would be to my benefit. It was to my benefit to remove myself from, you know, to fully, you know, accept and receive everything that Ron was able to give me, you know, through conversations and just the spirit of this man. He let me have it for a couple months. You know what I mean? And so with that responsibility, you have to do your job, which he did. He always said he looked at it as a job. He had his purpose and he went and he just executed. You know what I mean? So hate has a specific vernacular. You know what I mean? It definitely. And so he had the film uses these words. You know, the trailer, that's not what he says, by the way. Those aren't the words he says in the trailer. It's a lot more, you know, eye opening what he says. And but that's the language to sort of invite hate in. That's the invitation right there. And that's what he needed to do to get the trust of hate. You know, I'm not even going to call it the organization. I'm not going to call it a specific group of people. I'm going to say hate. Right. So I think it's I was OK with it. The actor was OK with it because it had a purpose. You know, I understand what it meant. And when you see the film and you hear this language, you like you might get, you know, like, is this too much cursing? Is this too much this or that? No, this is that it was necessary. It wasn't for shock value. It wasn't for entertainment value. It wasn't to be funny about it or anything. This is the language they had. They spoke and understood.
Yeah, it's a period piece infiltrate. As well. Yeah, it's 1978. Right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, but see, yeah, it's a period piece, but very contemporary. These are hate words that still get used today.
Absolutely.
I mean, you can hashtag some of the stuff when you see the movie, hashtag some of the words you heard. The slurs, see what comes up.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel like that is hopefully can be a part of the discussion after you see it.
And that's the part of it as well is just understanding the language and the words that are being spoken and their effect on the people that are in the film, but also just in how we play out in 2018. That's a big part of this. But I'm intrigued because this is a lot about code switching, this idea that Ron Stallworth sounds white. And the idea that you're on the phone and you're able to convince the Ku Klux Klan that you are as a good abiding white hater.
Yeah, right.
I don't know what you say.
White, right? Pure white, blooded
hater, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I talk about that idea of sounding black or sounding white, and that seems to be a through line throughout this film.
You know, I've been hearing that a lot, to this code switching term. I personally, John David speaking, I don't. I have mixed feelings about that. You know, that one of my favorite lines in the film, personally, was "What does a black man talk like?" I mean, I got experience. I went to private school. I went to a historically black college. I got family from North Carolina. I've got all these experiences. I got family in Mount Vernon. I've stayed there as well. I got experiences everywhere from Atlanta to even Italy. I was going to Italy since I was 7. So what am I supposed to sound like? You know, I just think all these experiences that accumulate, you just become these things that you lived, and then you talk the way you talk. I mean, based off of what you know and what you've lived through. So it was very important to me, that scene specifically, to get out there to this code switch, like he's got to put on his white voice.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to say that's disrespectful, but I mean that's I don't know how true that is for I don't know if that's a general that seems to be a general statement. You know what I mean? Like, it's specific to Ron. He was being himself. He uses his real name, which was a mistake. He didn't mean to do that, but he used his real name. So, I mean, there was, he was acting, yes, but he was coming from a place of, he had to convince them. So he came from a place of truth to do it.
There's something great about the film, and this is a testament to Spike Lee, that it isn't an overt white voice that Ron puts on.
Right.
There, I mean, he's
not putting on any voice. Right. That's how he, this is him.
And that's important, because you could see a direction going in a way where if you were going to try to dupe the Ku Klux Klan, that you would, you know, sound more, you know, white guy.
Right.
So there is something to be said about the fact that there isn't that switch in the film.
To me, it would be an organic, it would be a gimmicky if we try. Again, that's why I said it was in such responsible hands with Spike Lee. And because I was able, he trusted me, this legend trusted me with the material and gave me the confidence and the license to make choices based off of instinct. You know, obviously, I did all my extensive amount of research, and you sort of, the trick is, or the hardest part is, to let it go on game day. And you're able to let go, you know, of all your research and trust that it's in the gumbo because of your captain, because of Spike Lee. So that, to me, would cheapen, it would dilute the product if we were to make it a gimmick and sort of let that be the, like, look, guys, he can do both voices. He does too. No, but that's not what happened. That's not how he was successful.
Yeah. The film Black Klansman is great. It's in theaters coming up here on the 10th this weekend. Also, Ballers opens up as well on Sunday, season 4.
Good times.
For you, a former football player, are there similarities in the way? It was funny what you just said about the idea of all of the work that's done behind the scenes, the practice time, mm-hmm. to let it go on game day. Mm-hmm. Are there similarities in the way that athletes approach sport and the game to the way that actors approach the craft?
Well, there's similarities in their differences as well. Everybody has their own, you know, routine. I personally, I was, once I really learned how to study film in football, I was a film rat. I would just stay in there. Like, there's gym rats, but I was a film room rat. Like, I was in there just like studying, just watching all the film I could to, but then when they call a play and you're supposed to run right, but I don't know, if there's a defender right in front of you, you might want to go left. You know what I mean? And so, like, that's what happens in, you know, in acting as well. Like, the scene is set up one way, but if there's a true, honest moment that's happened that can force you to go left, emotionally speaking, or take the scene left, then you should go with it. And again, you need the right coach to help encourage that. You know, some people, there's some artists that like you to stick with the script and only the script and do it a certain way, which can work. But there's something about, like, finding out what happens, you know, when you're in the moment, you know.
Yeah. The character of Ricky Jarrett on Ballers, which is great. I love the show.
Oh, thank you.
Where does that character come from? Because that's a stereotype in the way that many people who watch football think that's how athletes are. Right. But it's a very nuanced character, and it stands out in an ensemble-driven show like Ballers. But where does Ricky Jarrett come from?
I appreciate that, man. That means a lot, because it was so important to me, starting off, especially when we first did the first season, to help people understand the stress that comes with these athletes, all the pressure that are put on these young kids. I mean, when that draft, after the draft, their life changes, their bank account changes, and they feel like they're responsible for taking everybody they know out of their situation. They think they've made it. They don't realize NFL stands for not for long. This doesn't last long. The money's not guaranteed. I mean, they're signing bonuses, but you're basically, it's a incentive-based contract. So I felt like, so everything that goes into that pressure, the pressure cookers of the NFL and what you have to do week to week, that gets to you, let alone the nature, the violent nature of the sport, all that kind of pressure. So I wanted to be able to live that truth, and I was able to do it. I've seen I've been in a lot of locker rooms. I know a lot of people. So it's not based on one person. It's based off I took it off of based off the experiences of the NFL, these people, and what not the game, but the business can do to a young man that knows nothing about business.
What I love, I was reading an interview that you did just recently about one of the great things about Ricky Jarrett is he's misunderstood.
This
concept of that we think that every human being has to fall into a category and therefore we can understand who they are and what life they're living. But there's a lot of this we see, especially with professional athletes, where we expect them to be a certain way and they live their own life and therefore we pass judgment.
I mean, in football specifically, to being misunderstood and not the, I mean, these young men are not acclimated. They're not trained to be professionals in school. You know, they're just, I think, I don't know. It just feels like that because of that pressure and because the nature of the sport itself. I mean, they need some kind of, I would say to all athletes out there, have a contingency plan, have something on the side, some kind of creative, I know, lane that you can help balance the violent nature of what you go through day in and day out. You know what I mean? Because it can take a toll on you mentally, physically, obviously.
For you, as a football player who played at Morehouse and also played in the NFL practice squad with
UFL,
the Rams.
NFL Europe.
How as you look back on your career now and a contingency plan, I think football was your contingency plan. You
know?
But how do you look at your career emotionally when you look back and you suffered injuries and had concussions? Like, how do you look back on your career emotionally playing football?
That's a good question. I can get personal here. What hurt me more, not the 5 or 6 concussions, not the torn Achilles, not the broken ribs, not the broken clavicle, not the sports hernia that I had to just actually repair. It was the NFL's last parting, or football, I should say, last parting gift to me. It was the pressure, the mental pressure, the business pressure of trying to, I didn't get to play. I was like, if there's 53 guys, I was like 54, trying to week in, week out, seeing guys going to tryouts every Tuesday, seeing guys get released every week. That it's hard to prepare for. I couldn't tell you how to prepare for that. Like trying to keep up, you know, trying to stay in the league, you know, especially once you get out. That was some of the hardest, for me personally, that was the hardest experience, trying to get back into the league once I got released. Being told I'll never play again by a GM after he promised me he was going to sign me to their practice squad after I got released from the St. Louis Rams. That was some of the hardest, the hardest experience I've ever had. And I put it into this craft now.
I was going to say, did some of that come roaring back when the script is handed to you for Rickie Jarrett? I mean, that's all what all of Ballers is about. Well, Are you able to make a distinction between I'm playing a role and a role that I actually live?
Well, because, I'm nothing like Rickie Jarrett, so that's sort of difficult. But I like Rickie Jarrett, like most people in this country. We have experiences, and we can share them. I have an ability to put those experiences into certain projects. But not just Rickie. I can put them in other characters as well.
Yeah. You know, for you, I was watching the Breakfast Club interview where you talked about watching your dad in Shakespeare in the Park.
Yes.
That's what got you interested in acting.
Yes. It was Richard III. Shakespeare in the Park. We would walk around New York sometimes. I was a little boy, and he'd recite his lines, you know, now it's the winter of our discontent, and like he'd just keep reciting all around. So I just fell in love with the craft. That and Glory did it for me. And then my mother, Juilliard, you know, she was a classically trained pianist, taught lessons at 11 years old in North Carolina. I mean, these are people, again, it's not the fame or the success. What success meant to them was feeling like they told the truth on that stage. It was about the process. And Spike Lee, again, he values process.
You know, for you, you talk a lot about being a young kid and being interested in acting, yet you pushed away from that and moved into athletics, into football, and now you find yourself with a career of being the star of Black Klansman. Mm. What pushed you away? What was it that said, I don't want this to be my career?
You know, as my father started, you know, ascending into the business, and as his stock had been rising, as he was becoming more recognizable, I was recognizing at a young age how different life was, how people were treating us, how people were treating me, especially after Malcolm X. Our life, like, literally changed. We needed more security. There was, you know, some threatening things that were happening. Mm-hmm. My life had changed. So I saw, as a kid, I was like, so the result of doing your research and loving the craft and getting into character translates to this kind of success?
Right.
I don't know if I want that. I just want to do the acting stuff. I don't know if I necessarily, you know, so that kind of changed it. And then also, too, because of how I was getting treated, there was resentment building up. Like, oh, they just want to be my friend because of, you know, everybody just wants to talk about my father. I think it's nepotism. I think I'm getting handed everything. Right. So football, that used to piss me off. So I could put that kind of rebellious spirit and that anxiety almost and that resentment, I can funnel it into something positive. I can use it as fuel to drive the engine to independence, which is what I was doing with football. I earned my own scholarship at Morehouse. I got to NFL. I was a professional bench sitter, you know, and I did that job with pride. All right. Still got some splinters. All right. But at least I earned that. I earned the right to sit on the bench and cheer my team on like a cheerleader. You know what I mean? I earned that right. My father had nothing to do with it.
Right.
So that, but underneath all those layers, I'm like, I just want to act though. I just want to do this. You know what I mean? I really do. But, and then it became sort of reluctant and sort of, well, more apprehensive because of, now I'm starting to get, once I saw that I'd have these successful games and the newspapers would say Denzel's son runs for 100 yards and 5 touchdowns, I'm like, well, I can't escape it in this thing. I might as well get into the other thing.
Well, it's funny because I thought about that in just this week when we're prepping for the interview.
Mm-hmm.
I think your dad said something in an interview, a one-liner that was like, I'm glad he's not playing football anymore because of concussions. The whole Google News feed was every pop culture website that I've never read before that, that just pulls that out.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be a more rabid interest, because of the industry that you're in for that kind of stuff. I mean, it is going to be something you're going to have to deal with, for your acting professional career.
Well, you're talking about just being linked to his name.
Just being linked to his name, but also hanging on every word. I mean, it was obviously an interview about something else, and they pulled it out, and they then said, I'm going to talk about your concussions, even though it's something that your dad said.
Well, I mean, listen, I'm okay with it, because I'm Spike believed in me, Renato Marcus Green. I did a film called Monsters of Men. I did well in Sundance that we got into TIFF as well. There's people out there that believe in me and have nothing to do with my father. I feel like I'm building a resume. I'm doing the work. I'm just quietly chipping away at it. I didn't do any press the first couple of years because it's about the work. And I knew I was going to have to answer certain questions about my father, and that's okay. But I've been chipping away at this thing again with football. Every day on that practice field, I was on a practice squad. So that means you are a professional practice player. It was the Super Bowl every practice. I was going hard because one time I'm gonna get my opportunity. So that's the same way here. I with this, I'm just gonna keep chipping away at it. What people say, they're gonna say, if they connect to the movies, that's great. If they connect to the performances, that's even better.
Yeah.
If they're affected by the performance, that's the goal. And whoever my father is, it doesn't matter, because I'm putting the work in, period.
Absolutely. John David Washington is great in the new Spike Lee film, Black Klansman. He plays Ron Stallworth, the first African-American police officer in Colorado Springs who infiltrates and becomes a member of David Duke's Ku Klux Klan. Some amazing phone conversations with Topher Grace's David Duke in that movie. He's also the star, plays Ricky Jarrett in the HBO show Ballers. Big weekend coming up here. John David, thanks so much for joining us and talking to us. I appreciate it.
Thank you.